Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is the Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes, indeedy. And this is episode 384. And I don't know if we've said the words Murray Leinster in the conversation in those 383 previous episodes.
Probably not.
Probably not. He's a classic science fiction writer. Yeah.
Do people really know about him at all, other than nerds like you and me?
Yeah, I think it's you and me and maybe Jesse.
I just count Jesse in there for this kind of thing.
So he's William Fitzgerald Jenkins is his real name.
No, I don't care for it.
Yep, he passed away in 1975.
Okay.
And writes under the name Murray Leinster, and he is one of the earliest science fiction writers that, you know, showed up in all the magazines and such in the 1940s and 50s into the 60s. He was, you know, one of the first winners of a Hugo Award, you know, when it was just starting out for a story called First Contact.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was also an alien encounter, which we've got some of here in these stories. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about a novel. It's a short novel called Talents Incorporated. And then a short story called A Matter of Importance. And so, yeah, I'm really curious about why you picked the two.
Well, and I will say, I didn't realize that Murray Leinster, like, won a Hugo and, you know, and good for him.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. I just would come across his stories. I think it was probably in LibriVox. I believe Mark
domain,
Nelson
yeah.
there did Talents Incorporated and The Pirates of Ersatz, which is another purely delightful story. If you liked either of these two with their sense of humor and their sense of kind of contrariness in how you expect things to go, then you will like that one a lot. And that is a novel, a science fiction novel.
Yeah.
But it also
set
in space.
With a famous cover of, maybe I'll put the cover. It's the one with the pirate climbing up with a slide rule in his mouth.
Oh.
I'll post a picture of that in the post.
Mathematics is extremely important in that book, believe it or not.
I love it.
As well as piracy.
Yes.
As well as celebrity. That would be a good one to do sometime if we wanted another light read. I picked these both for summertime, or I put them in summertime, just thinking of light reading. So the reason I like both these so much, and I really wanted to do A Matter of Importance, and I was like, it's just not long enough. And the thing I like about both of these is everybody has kind of a common sense, they think, way to look at the situations, the crises that arise in these two stories. And the answers are not to look at it from within inside that box.
That's good, yeah.
In the case of A Matter of Importance, it's how did the police handle things versus how does the military handle things. When we are looking at all these things, we could talk about this for both different ones. But so that's the one for A Matter of Importance. And then Talents Incorporated, it surprised me when I reread it recently, how modern it was in a lot of ways, of kind of snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
You know, by criticizing themselves for getting it wrong, so because other people were, or the, you know, the mean space people who are coming, the Meekins, I think it is, we're going to, now they're going to destroy us because we won the battle. Now they're going to do this because of that. And nobody ever stopped and thought, but wait, you won. Now what do you do with that? They just kept not liking that. And so in each case, everyday resourcefulness would de-escalate these big threats. In Talents Incorporated, over time, by using a unexpected resource in a very practical way. And in A Matter of Importance, by just really looking at the situation, assessing it through different eyes, those were the things. So it's kind of like what everyone knows, but that everyone doesn't know in these stories in that sense.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, very good. Yeah. Well, they're certainly enjoyable. You know, and I'm glad to have read them, you know, that's, you know, add more notches, you know, in this classic science fiction, which I just love.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this was neat. So it was a treat to read. So which one would you like to talk about first?
I guess maybe a matter of importance since it's shorter. What do you think?
Sure, why not? You bet. So, yeah. So what is this book or a short story?
Yeah. So, I guess it's maybe a novella since it's got a lot of sections.
It's about 50 pages on my Kindle. Okay. Yeah.
So, the main character is a policeman. He's going to retire soon. He's got a son who's also a policeman. They're in outer space. Mm-hmm. They're on a planet. And they're used to planetary ships going by and other communication with other planets and all this sort of thing. And his son is off on some assignment, but he's going to come back because his name is Timmy. And Timmy's girl is on her way. And when she gets there, Timmy's going to get married. Sergeant Madden is the name of our hero. And he's busy thinking about, I guess by the time I retire, I might be a grandfather. He's feeling kind of old. He doesn't like it. And they get a message that comes in that says, from a beacon that says, you know, the ship that Timmy's girl is on had a problem and they're going to have to make an emergency landing. Hmm. And he's like, oh, okay, well. I'm on the next one up, so I'll take it. And also because it's Timmy's girl, I get to take it. And Timmy's out of system right now, so we'll get this other young guy to come with me. So he'll be the younger guy and also kind of being trained while he goes.
Mm-hmm.
And as they go to look for the ship, they can't find the ship where it's supposed to be. And they eventually find traces that the ship had been hidden and somehow flown away in a way that they didn't understand because those kind of ships wouldn't have rockets to take off with again and so forth, these sorts of things. And what they find is that there are some aliens living in system that they'd had conflicts with, I guess, decades ago, maybe?
Yeah. A while back.
Yeah. And they had driven them all away. They thought they were all gone, but these guys were there, and they're like, oh, now what do we do?
Yeah. And they're pretty good at fighting, those guys, the Hawks.
Yes, they do love to prove their honor, and you do that by fighting and fighting until you win. So Sergeant Madden is thinking about it going, oh, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah, that's from back when we used to have military. Because now we have cops. That's a much better way to handle things. And so he says, the cops handled traffic naturally as they handled sanitary code enforcement and delinks, which is delinquents, and mercantile offenses and murderers and swindlers and missing persons. Everything was dumped on the cops. They'd even handled the Hucks in time gone by, and those are the aliens, which in still earlier times would have been called a space war and put down in all the history books. And then he's thinking about them as a case, and he goes, it did not occur to him that the Hucks would hardly have been called a case by anybody but a cop.
I love it. You said delinks and it's delinquents. I never made that connection.
Really?
That's what the delinquent is. What did they describe? But I never made the connection to the word. Out loud and I was like, oh, delink. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Funny. I like it.
Yeah, that is funny. Well, because they equate he and the guy he takes with him, and I'll have to find this guy's name, but I can't find it right now. But he's kind of explaining to this kid, which is handy for us, that, you know, delinks don't think about anyone else. What they think about is they want to be important.
Mm.
And they're important by being more and more and more outrageous. And they don't think about anyone else and who it might hurt and what it means to them because they're only thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
And delinks are the bane of a policeman's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, well, the Hucks are all delinks. They're like that.
Mm-hmm.
He says, all they think about is their honor. They want to be important.
Yeah, they want to be important or seem important, right?
Right.
Yeah, because that's what he says, that the cops are actually important, but they don't seek it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So you're honored.
Mm-hmm. It's the work that they do. It just brings the importance in rather than chasing importance.
Right.
Yeah, and they call it glamour, too, as if it was some some trait, some glowing trait that you add to yourself somehow.
Right.
But, yeah, but I loved it. Yeah, and Delinks is spelled D-E-L-I-N-K-S.
Yeah.
So I got to defend myself a little bit. There wasn't a Q in there. That would have been a giveaway.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I love it. I love that. That's really cool.
Well, and he says, so, you know, a Delink tries to matter in the world he lives in. It's a small world with only him and his close pals in it. So he struts before his pals. He don't realize that anybody but him and his pals are human, see?
Hmm.
And I thought, you know, a lot of what we're seeing here, because this book is from, gosh, I don't know, the 50s maybe?
Yeah, I wrote it down. Astounding Magazine, September 1959.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. Astounding Magazine. I like it. But so this is echoing what everybody would know about delinquents and policemen and stuff at the time. But the application of this thinking to a alien space that aliens do some editing there to space aliens would have been something new, and it is amusing and everything the way the guy has to think and manipulate around the way the Hux would respond and what it takes to make them feel that they're important while what they're doing is just getting them to follow the rules. And you realize that by them following these rules long enough, eventually they'll just become part of the society. You know, which is what you want. You can have your own culture, you can do your own things, but just follow the rules, man.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, look what we've come to now. Here we are, so much further in the future. And that description was just so perfect to me. I'm oh, nobody matters but you and your pals. It's a small world. No one else seems human.
Yeah, and then the way he deals with the Hux, right? Because he doesn't want to fight him, but the way not to is to make him feel important.
Right.
So he invents a fleet that's headed our way. And he said, we need your help. We humbly ask your help, because you guys are so stinking great, to help us out. And then an agreement is made, like a treaty or a... you know, an agreement of non-hostility. And then it's discovered that the incoming fleet doesn't exist. It's kind of like these bubbles or whatever,
Right, but the Hux don't know that.
Right, the Hux don't, But then,
Yeah,
but then there's going to be no one to fight. So if they don't know it, they'll know it shortly.
Right.
But yeah, but so there's no fight that's about to happen. And then now, so it's kind of, you know, this was 1959, I mean... This is not unlike a little bit of Star Trek, you know, where, you know, you've got the Klingons who always want to fight, and that's their honor. And, you know, there's episodes in which they're handled, you know, it's always a minor piece of the plot, but where they're handled, you know, one-on-one in a certain way. You know, I remember old Picard, you know, puffing somebody up. You know, say you're great, you know, and all this, you know, so that the conflict is avoided. But yeah, it's a very true thing. Yeah.
When you think about that being written in 1959, so that's World War II.
Yeah, Korean War, right?
And Korean War has been, you know, going on and everything, and so he's kind of flinking all this, going, you know, what's another way to think about it? Which I really liked. And I also really liked that they did an elaborate ruse, and the ship that comes in to help support him in this, that's got military and all this stuff, they're willing to do whatever the cop says. They'll just follow his lead. He's the one in charge, not the captain of the ship. And this ruse is perfect for making them feel like they were able to beat these guys, or at least able, they, no, wait, that what it was is that they thought that they had a huge force. That was it. But I loved when he's the assistant, or the, you know, private or whatever, it wouldn't be a private, but the other policeman says, Why did they actually wind up volunteering where they had our kidnapped people? Because they were trying to hide a mine that they were using to get ore. The Hucks were. And he goes, oh, because we waltzed right in, talked about something else, and we're going to leave without letting them tell what they'd done. Which was so great.
Yes.
They had to tell us.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, so, as you're talking, it makes me think about, you know, history. And if you have two sides that are both seeking importance, I think conflict is inevitable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you'll never get out of it. There's this saving face that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, if you have someone who's got to do that, you know, so much of diplomacy is figuring out how to get out of it where both sides seem strong. Nobody seems weak.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting. You know, this is a pretty cool story. Yeah,
they don't mind seeming weak. They say these dangerous space aliens are coming and we're going to be spread so thin and we really need your help. If you could help watch out for them and help us defend against them. They're like, oh, we're not going to do that. I was like, well, okay, we're all going to be fighting them eventually. We can fight them together or we can fight them separately, but that's your call.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he starts to leave because Willis is going, did they tell us this stuff? And that's when he's like, they couldn't even tell us to go to hell because it looked like we didn't care what they said.
Mm-hmm.
How could that be?
How interesting.
They had to make themselves important.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, fun story. It's very cool. But yeah. I this is the best kind of short story where it leaves you with an idea. You know, there's no big surprise. Well, I guess it is. There's a twist at the end there that, you know, that the fleet doesn't exist, but it's still a very thoughtful story.
Well, that's the thing. And the way that they just maneuver the situation, mm-hmm. the way he kind of just plays it by ear and says, oh, okay. All right. Let's try this. Let's try that.
Yeah.
And, I really just loved the whole idea of saying, how would policemen handle this?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, because they don't care about their honor.
Right. And what a policeman's goal is versus what a military goal is.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You run into jerk policemen.
Yeah.
But it's, exactly. Yeah. It's not that we have to win and we have to do these things. We have to gain these goals. It's, here's a ticket because you were speeding. Don't speed anymore.
Yeah. That's the goal. Don't speed anymore.
Right.
Because it's dangerous, right? You could hurt somebody
yourself. Yeah, yeah right. Behave.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And however you get to that behavior is okay, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, legal ways. But I'm just saying that, you know, if you need to be cast as the bad guy in order to achieve the goal of that not happening again, the cop is fine with that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
No problem.
Right. How interesting. Yeah. You know, I thought that Murray Leinster might have been Catholic based on something I had heard a long time ago. I found no evidence that he is.
Oh, okay.
But I did find on this website, murrayleinster.com, which I don't know who runs it. But at the end of the little about piece, it says, most importantly, he dreamed. He once said to his youngest daughter, I couldn't live without my fantasies. His imagination and constant study of philosophy, theology, history, and science fueled his writing for all his life. So it's interesting that they put theology in there. So,
yeah.
But I wasn't able to find anything elaborating on, you know, what his spiritual life was like or if he was an adherent to anything. So,
theology
implies Christianity.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But I've read a number of stories of his. He's written some horror stories or, you know, thriller monster type stories. He's written some that are more straightforward, like there's several about maybe a medical doctor and his little pet, and they go around to different planets and things happen. And they're not ever... He didn't write enough things that they were ever put into a book, like here's a fix-up book or anything like that. But I've enjoyed all of them.
Oh, good.
But my favorites are the ones that are amusing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just think that's where he's at his best.
Yeah,
and also, I like a sense of humor, a sense of satire.
Well, that's great. So the other one, the novel, is called Talents Incorporated, and it's from 1962. So we just did it in chronological order.
Well, nice.
Because you were brilliant that way. Well done.
Well, yes, it's just a natural talent I have. Oh, it's one of my talents. I don't know how it happens. It's just I know what order books come in. Seems useless until you're on a podcast.
Until you're on a podcast, that's right. That's awesome. I love it. And this one has that funny going through it, too.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Yeah, so it starts off, and is it Captain Bors, B-O-R-S, as he's a young man, and he's on a planet, and everybody's busy burning papers. All the important people are busy destroying anything that would incriminate anybody from their government, because the Meekans, is that it?
Yeah.
They're coming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is a gigantic, horrible space society or government that has been steadily taking over one planet after another and imposing these horrible draconian laws, and they're just despotic and they're awful and they just kill people at the drop of a hat, and these are very peaceful people, and so they're trying to get ready because no one can tell ever specifically when spaceships will pop into wherever they're going because of the way space travel works. But they know they're coming in 2 to 3 days, 3 to 4 days.
Yeah, they know they're coming. Yeah, and it's pretty much, you know, any minute they're going to show up, and that's kind of the stress they're living under.
But it's interesting, you know, the Bors
too is like, we're going to lose so hard, you know, at the beginning. He's just like, this is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because he's from a planet, he and his uncle are from a planet that already was subjugated by the Meekans, and they got out just ahead of time, so they'd been living on this planet trying to kind of help shore things up, but you know, these people are too peaceful. So in the middle of all this, here comes this fellow Mr. Morgan, or is it Professor? Mr. Morgan and his daughter, who say, we have some very important information for you. Very important. And you need to listen to us. And we happen to know that under the ocean, there is a spy, or there's a a nuclear missile on a submarine. And there's a spy on land who's sending information to them. And when the moment is right, they're going to shoot that and just destroy a whole bunch of the planet. So this is our sample of the kind of information we can give you, because we're Talents Incorporated. And that's, and you can count on it. Is that the catchphrase that they have?
Something like that.
Talents Incorporated. I'll have to look. It's Talents Incorporated, and you can count on it, or whatever. You can
count on it. Yep.
And I read it 1,000 times. I don't know why I can't remember it, but,
that's fun.
And this guy goes, oh, you know what? Actually, it does kind of make sense that that might be happening. So they plan a very careful, non-obtrusive way to kind of fly over this lake where this thing's supposed to be and see if there are these guys in this cabin and all this stuff. And sure enough, it's all there. So they're able to stealthily take all of these things out in a way that doesn't give it away to the Meekans that this has happened. But he goes back and the guy says, see, checked out, didn't it? Right? Right? So, you know, you can count on our information, and I'm going to give you some more information and you can use it. And he's like, well, wait, where's this coming from? So what happens is I don't know if he takes him to meet the talents at that moment, but what he basically says is there are people who have strange talents that no one can explain. And in a sense, what they're talking about is something like being psychic or whatever. But it's like this one guy who can instantly notice if something's wrong with a math program or find things that are better. Here's somebody who always knows when spaceships are going to land, what time. And as I said, nobody can tell that. But this guy always knows, and he's always right. Just weird little things. But when you put all these people together, it's Talents Incorporated. So this guy has all these people with all these different talents that are small but could be useful under certain circumstances. And he goes around offering, you know, we can help solve your problem. What is your problem? And I'll see if, you know, like three of these people have information that can go together to help. Well, he's there offering his spaceship full of talents to help with this war.
Yep.
And there's a secret reason that he feels like this is a good idea, but he won't tell.
Right. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. And yeah, it's fun. You know, like the math guy.
I love
him. I think his name is Logan. But he's awesome. And so he figures out how to calculate incredibly complex variable speed missile trajectories so that the enemy could never destroy the missile because it doesn't act like a missile should. So, yeah, and that's like huge. So when the Meekins do show up and there's another person that has a talent, they said they know exactly when they're going to show up. They're going to show up on at this time, you know. So they knew exactly. So they were all ready, and then took them out. I mean, they had an incredible victory. And then after which, a more fatalism or whatever you want to say. I can't believe we won. Now what do we do? You know, there's like we shouldn't have won. We should have done something different. You know,
says oh no, because now that we won, their vastly superior fleet is going to show up and find out that we destroyed all these of their ships, and they're going to destroy the whole planet. They're going to kill everybody here as a punishment and an example for even trying to fight back.
Yeah.
So every time something happens, they come up with a horrible scenario, because if this was written in 62, of course, the obvious people to think about are the Nazis or somebody like that who are just merciless. A lot of spaceships,
right,
and a lot of planets under their subjugation.
Yeah, plus they've conquered a lot.
Right.
This is not their first time watching them do their thing.
They've rolled through Czechoslovakia. They've rolled through Poland. They're here. They're in France. It's Dunkirk all over again. So So it's kind of a double-edged sword in that sense. What Captain Bors is having to do is try to make himself take the Talents Incorporated advice, because he still, even though it keeps checking out, he's like, this is so stupid. You know, the things that they're predicting and the sorts of ways they're applying the information they have is so ridiculous. And Gwendolyn, that's the daughter's name, the beautiful daughter, by the way. But at one point she says, I understand. It does seem insane. It seems like lunacy. She goes, but, you know, it would have seemed insane to talk about flying machines 1,000 years ago. It would have seemed insane to think about people talking to each other when they're 1,000 miles apart so long ago.
Yeah.
This is just, we're ahead of time. And Morgan says, lots of fortunes have been made by people assuming other people are idiots. In some ways they are, you know. And then I said to myself, possibly a fortune can be made by somebody assuming that he is an idiot. So I assumed it was idiotic to doubt something that visibly happened merely because I couldn't understand it.
Hmm.
And Talents Incorporated was born. It's quite well done.
Yeah, that's neat.
And they're continually having to reassure Captain Bors, even though he's getting example after example. And you really understand it, because these little bits of information, like you say about the math, or the guy who knows when spaceships show up, or the woman who is, she dreams a daydream about something she'd like to have happen, and suddenly people all believe it.
And then there's a department for predicting dirty tricks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the guy is such a jerk and so unpleasant. He goes, I know what I'd do. Goes, oh, probably somebody did that. And they go check it. Sure enough, somebody did do that. He's the one who thought of the nuclear vessel under the water that's going to bomb the planet. Oh, he's like, I know what I'd do if I was them. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, let's check. Sure enough. Oh, man.
That's
so, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's fun. It's, you know, the parable of the talents. I mean, yeah, it leaps to mind.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just fun. It's cool. Everybody's using their talents. They're not burying them. And plus, you know, these folks are shunned. They do use the word freak. You know, one of them, the Logan said, you think I'm a freak? You know, you need my talent, man. You know, and he's the guy who's doing math, and we're calling him a freak, I guess. But this idea of, you know, people that have been shunned who come together and step forward with their talent, and it turns out to be the piece that's needed.
Right.
It's really cool. And then now one of the, what do you, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the word that, you know, someone who can see into the future.
Psychic?
Prophet. Prophet or something like that, yeah. Where, you know, she said, you know, we're getting to the big battle at the end, right? And she says, what I see is you guys staying still and you have a victory. You know, so, you know, and then the trope where, what does that actually mean? So you have this fight between someone who's ready to just do nothing and just basically sacrifice the entire fleet for the people on the planet, which is a noble thing in its head. But, you know, they're convinced that if we do nothing, then we'll end up winning. How that will actually happen, I don't know. And that, I couldn't help but think of Christ there, because he won by getting crucified. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, so I'm wondering, is this where this is going? And then you have the other person who is like, no, I'm not going to sit here and do nothing. That is not what we're doing. We are going to do something, you know? So he ends up doing something, but the something he does results in the fleet doing nothing. And then they win.
And the thing that's interesting is that because they're answering the objections of the king, who says, oh, great, now they're going to find out the fleet was destroyed. And what he says is, okay, no, we're not, because what we're going to do is we're going to go, I'll take my ship full of men, says Captain Bors, and I'm going to go acting like I'm a pirate ship.
Pirate, yeah.
Like our fleet all got destroyed, and I'm going to show up going, I barely got away. The Meekan took over the whole planet, because I guess they can't get information back that quickly, and it wouldn't matter. And so he starts kind of raiding these different subjugated planets, because they need the food. They need the supplies. They weren't planning on, they thought they were all going to die. They need the food. So he's doing all this. And at the same time, it's affecting the people on those planets who also hate being subjugated. And they start spreading rumors about it and wanting to support them and wanting to come on board to be pirates, which is supported by the woman who's daydreaming about, you know, the dashing captain and all these various things. So because he's trying to just kind of cover things up, because the king isn't wrong, this is how the Meekan would act, he's also providing a dual storyline going on of what they're doing to try and solve problems in this pirate guise. And that winds up working its way into something that the talents foresaw parts of the results of that, but not, of course, how he was doing it. Right. If you know what I mean.
I do, yeah.
And so it's interesting, because there are several conversations I found interesting, and this is, I guess, Leinster thinking about philosophy, where they talk about, is this precognition, and so we have no free will?
Yeah, that was the word I was looking for. It's going to happen no matter what. Precognition, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And is there any way, is this what the future is, and the future is unchangeable?
Right.
Yeah.
And Morgan keeps saying, no, you don't have to do any of the things they're saying. No one has to react to any of this stuff. They just kind of know these little things that they know. They're not predicting the future.
Mm-hmm.
They're just saying, here's when a ship's going to come in. And he goes, if something happens to it out in space, I guess it wouldn't come in. But that just doesn't, it's like his talent is just that he can see that little thing. I was never really convinced by his conversation about it, but I understood. Yeah. So I understood what Captain Bors was complaining about. But I did like also the idea of, in both these stories, the problem solving is extremely unconventional.
Yes.
And so it's going against what everybody thinks it should be. In the first one with the policeman, it's just the young man's being trained. He's thinking, well, wouldn't it be like this? Or, no, because of that, you know. So he's not arguing about it. But in this one, the main character is actively kicking the whole way against everything he's being advised to do.
Yeah, because it makes no sense. Yep.
No.
Yeah, and there's this little conversation between him and Gwendolyn. So Gwendolyn says, "It's a contradiction in terms for a fleet to win a battle by letting itself be destroyed. Perhaps the captain..." And then Boris says, "It's also a contradiction in terms for all our troubles to come because we won." We won a victory. Now we regret that we weren't all killed. But it's madness for the king to propose to get us all slaughtered in hope of rousing the Mechanese better nature.
Yes. You know,
so, yeah, he's fighting against that whole thing. It just makes no sense to him.
Right.
And exactly. Without him, they would have lost, probably. Right. So, yeah, so he came up with this. Well, again, it was another bit of fakery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, fake fleet.
Yeah, which is... So,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So another
thing that ties these together.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's good stuff.
Well, yeah. And it requires him to become increasingly flexible.
Mm-hmm.
We're not told he's not flexible in the beginning, but we just see... And because we understand why he doesn't want to believe any of these things, it's insane.
Yeah.
But in his actions as a pirate... And as things go along and he's kind of going, well, he did say that, you know, Morgan would have said this, so maybe this thing is right. So he's like, or he recognizes, he goes, oh my gosh, that woman with the dreamy eyes. This is her daydreaming about everybody joining up and bringing all their ships to help and everything. He's starting to realize where these things are working in. And so it's funny to see he's able to take advantage then of all these really strange individual human talents lead to him being able to creatively think, and that leads him to become flexible.
Yeah.
And how he's applying things.
So he needed all that to be occurring for him to do what he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting, complex deal. Yeah, this is a trope in science fiction a lot. You know, this is one of the earlier examples. But even ever since H.G. Wells in the early 1900s and stuff, just this time travel stuff, and is the future set? You know, when somebody sees something in the future, is it set? And the stories that I like best are not the ones where they say, oh, a different universe is created every time you make a decision, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think some people actually believe, you know? So... but something like this to me is what makes sense to me. I know it's all fiction and fantasy, but the idea of it, that it's almost as if everything falls into line the way that it's supposed to happen, you know, that there is a way that occurs, you know, so, well,
what's mentioned in, Paladin of Souls, right? Mm. By Louis McMaster.
Oh, yeah. Bijou,
where she is complaining, Ista is complaining to the bastard god of, why didn't you send someone to save my husband? I think it was. And he says, I did. I told person after person after person. And some set off and were killed. And some set off and turned aside because it was too hard. And some wouldn't answer the call. And he goes, now I'm asking you, I'm doing this for someone else. Are you going to be one of those who doesn't answer the call?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And very so good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. And that's the thing where it's like God. I mean, God, just because I'm told to do something doesn't mean somebody else isn't being told to do something similar that may or may not have a bearing on the same thing in the big picture.
Or something that's seemingly contradictory.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's tough, you know, because... Yeah, when you look at the timeline from God's perspective, it's like he's got the whole movie in front of him. And he's, we believe in free will, and free will occurs, but to him it's already occurred and is occurring at the same time. You know, so it's just, so the idea of a timeline in, you know, as a Catholic being changeable is actually doesn't make sense, but at the same time we're not... We don't believe in predestination.
We're in the story, and what we think and do matters.
Right, exactly right. But God sees what has happened and what is happening.
Yeah, he's outside of time, and this is where, you know, my head starts to crack open a little bit. But
so.
You kind of just have to go with it. Well, and it's the same thing of this whole idea is what Boris is struggling with. And so the other thing that's kind of interesting to think about in terms of faith and everything is, what does it take for him to really find the truth and accept it, because it's like finding faith in God.
Mm.
You know, you allow yourself to think, what if, and if this, then that, if there is a God, then what does that mean about these things?
Mm.
And you look for proof or things God, you know, helps you.
Right.
As you look and you suddenly go, well, wait, there's evidence for this thing. There's evidence for that thing.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've met a person.
Mm. Yep.
Who is God.
Yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and you can follow it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people think you can't, but a lot of people have a lot of wrong ideas.
Thank you very much. We all needed to hear that.
I think I just fixed the internet, so
well,
I may have, but...
Mission accomplished, Scott.
Yeah.
That halo just got a little brighter. One of the things I... found in this story, though, that also echoed what we see in A Matter of Importance. So I think Leinster really believes this, you know,
yeah.
Is he says, throughout history, there have been three kinds of people in every community. There are the barbarians, there are the tribesmen, and there are the civilized. He goes, and when he's talking about the barbarians, he goes, and he says about the others, he says, and everywhere and at all times there are barbarians. They seek personal triumphs. They thrive on high emotional victories. And at no time will barbarians ever leave either civilized men or tribesmen alone. They crave triumphs over them and each other, and they create disaster everywhere until they are crushed.
What an unfortunate truth. Yeah.
It's the same thing. He's put, so the enemy, so to speak, in both these stories are those barbarians, because, or the delinks, because they're seeking that emotional high. They're seeking the victory. They want to win. And they'll target anyone to make it happen, because that's all they understand.
Very good. Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, what's your motivations, you know, on a personal level? What's the motivation? What is your motivation?
Yeah.
If your motivation is not correct, at least your main motivation, then the rest of it is kind of corrupted.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, and it is unfortunate, but, you know, our history shows us that, that is true. It's been true all through history.
Oh, yeah.
And there, unfortunately, some battles have to be fought.
That's it. I mean, and we've seen it most recently, to me, in the most vicious, violent form, was when the October 7th attack on Israel happened.
Oh, yeah.
The atrocities that were perpetrated and the propaganda that came sweeping after it to make it seem like that was justified, those were the acts of people who wanted to win at any cost and didn't think other people were human.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal, brutal. Prayers for all of them.
Always. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Both sides.
Well, that's it.
Yep.
Because you can't possibly be happy and live that way. It just doesn't equate. So, yeah. So, anyway, those were the things that I kind of saw and appreciated in those stories.
And they are fun. Yeah.
And they're very fun. And also, like I say, it's really the fact that both stories take... just insert this viewpoint that you do not expect as a different way to look at how do you handle the people who are the barbarians.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It is quite a pair that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
two different ways to deal with barbarians, but similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But with completely different methods, because the stories are just talking about something different altogether.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have me very interested in Leinster. I know that a lot of his stuff is on Project Gutenberg, so a lot of it can be gotten. Even when you go on Amazon and get a Kindle version, they're very cheap.
And LibriVox, there are a number of them. At least, like I said, the Talents Incorporated and Pirates of Ersatz, and I think Operation Terror, and maybe Oh gosh, there's something from the abyss, monster from the abyss, or something, creature from the abyss, or something like that.
Mm.
Those two were the scary ones, you know.
Cool.
Those are both good, just very different. Mm-hmm. And I need to go. I haven't looked at LibriVox for a little while. I need to go back and look.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never spent much time in LibriVox.
Oh.
But I should. Readers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a list of favorites.
Yeah, in fact, mm-hmm. I made a list of favorites on, you know, Forgotten Classics way over there. That's my last post, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had it, and it was actually linked to on Wikipedia on the LibriVox page. But then somehow it got erased, so I remade it.
Hmm.
So it might be the most recent one if you go over there.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good.
But just, you know, when you look around, there are all kinds of books that are free, and I really have a soft spot for Edgar Wallace and these stories from the late 1800s, early 1900s, the crime thrillers and the mysteries and, you know, so I've listened to a number of those from there also.
Yeah, very good.
Jack of Judgment, you can't beat it, baby. Angel of Terror.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, that's a real good one. I would love us to read it sometime.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Angel of Terror. So, love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fun. Yeah, Forgotten Classics was great. If y'all don't know, Julie had a podcast for many years where she read books. It's called Forgotten Classics, and I assume it's still up, right?
That's all sitting there.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's all available.
I think it's ForgottenClassicsHC.com.
That's HC, Forgotten Classics.
Okay.
.blogspot.com.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah, go check it out. Lots of really great things. Very good. You. All right. So next up for us, this is going to be great to beat the heat. It's Singing in the Rain.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that.
Summer movie.
I love it. Yes. That's great. Yes. So good.
So classically American.
Yes. I love it. Really looking forward to it. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Well, cool.
Have you seen it before?
I don't recall. I mean, in my head, I see a dance number, it's black and white, guy with an umbrella dancing in the rain.
Yeah, well, so, it's at night, so it's not black and white, but it's at night, so we'll allow it.
So it's not a black and white movie? Okay.
No.
So that was what's in my head. So, all right.
It is in glorious color.
Excellent.
It is Debbie Reynolds' first movie.
Uh-huh.
It's Gene Kelly. It's Donald O'Connor does one of the funniest dances you're ever going to see. And you've probably seen it because it's clipped all the time.
Nice.
But, I'm so glad then because, I mean, this is one I practically have memorized.
Oh,
I've seen it so many times. I just love it so much.
Good. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Looking forward. All right.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Oh, yes,
go and get you some Leinster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some summer reading going.
You betcha. All right. Take care, everybody.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.